Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, May 20th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Today, gold, a little pressure on gold, down 260 at 1,253. Silver was up 4 at 1,660. $1,660 for silver. Platinum was up 7 at $1,025. Palladium down 1, $561. Let me just write that down. And we have the USDX today is stronger by 0.07 at 95.36. Crude oil pressure down 4.1 at 47.67. 47.67 for crude oil. And the paper markets today, they were all happy today. Dow up 63 points at 17,499. The NASDAQ was up 57 at 4769. And the S&P up 12 at 2052. 10-year yield 185. Euro 112. European and Asian markets were all higher overnight. You know, we're going into next week, I believe we're heading into the Memorial Day weekend, Al. And we have a G7 meeting that's in Japan that's being held on the 26th and the 27th. In addition to the G7 meeting, you also have Janet Yellen. She's at she's accepting some sort of a medal, but she will also be in a panel discussion. So all of Wall Street's ears will be on what she has to say on the 27th of May. So we might see a little pressure on gold and silver next week. I like to think it's going to maintain at least this level, but usually going into a three-day weekend, going into a G7 meeting, and particularly going into a some sort of a discussion panel with Janet Yellen, you're going to have higher paper markets and maybe a little pressure on gold and silver. Why do you want to talk about a little bit of pressure on gold and silver? It's great buying opportunities, folks. These are still low levels for gold and silver. But you never know, something could happen and it could certainly reverse it. So I think we'll stay steady at this level or be higher. I don't think we're going to be much lower than what we are, though, today.
All right. Got an article here. The headline is J.P. Morgan. Gold entering a new and long bull market. Now, this is an interesting article simply because this is from the the head, the global head of fixed income at J.P. Morgan Chase. And they're advocating, they're saying, look, gold is going up and it's going to go up for a long time. In an interview with CNBC, Salita Marcelli, global head of fixed income at J.P. Morgan Chase, revealed that that investment bank is recommending that clients position themselves for a new and very long bull market in gold. She explained that the negative interest rates around the world are making gold a more attractive investment. Since gold is a non-yielding asset and has minimal storage costs, it actually compares quite favorably with the increasing number of negative yield bonds on the global stage. It has a positive carry. Now, I'm going to read another article in a moment from another source that also talks about the rising price of gold and attributes it to negative interest rates. And as I'll explain in the second article, I don't doubt that negative interest rates play a role, but I don't think that's the primary driver behind rising demand for gold. It's a part of it, but it's not primary in my opinion. Salita suggested that central banks might consider diversifying their reserves into gold with the fear that they might be getting negative interest rates on their existing holdings. Gold is a great portfolio hedge in an environment where world government bonds are at historic lows. What else? Near-term support for gold is in the 1,250 to 260 range. Let's see. Let me go through this. Salita believes that there will be more legs to the gold market this year, with a high probability of gold reaching $1,400 at some point. $1,400, of course, at some point. Earlier this year, Paul Ciano of Merrill Lynch, Bank of America, stated that Bank of America went long on gold at $1,089. That would be right after the first of the year, looking for a potential rise as high as $1,550 before the year is out. All of which is simply, you know, generally speaking, I expect those major banks over the past four years, thereabouts, to tell us that gold is a bad investment, stay away from it, don't go to gold, blah, blah. When you see the major banks starting to say, recommend gold, it's certainly evidence that not a bad idea. You know, what we've said and what we've been saying for years, they're catching up with us. And, no, this is probably a pretty good idea. Now, here's the other one that rings my bell. And this is foreign central banks jettisoning U.S. debt at alarming pace, buying gold. There's the headline. Continuing a trend that started last year, central banks around the world are dumping U.S. debt at record pace. Central banks sold off a net $17 billion in U.S. Treasury bonds in March. Now, that may be a record pace for a month. I don't know that it is. That might not be the highest they've had monthly sell-off rate that they've had in recent history. But in any case, $17 billion doesn't impress me. All right. Again, I look back. We did $80 billion a month in quantitative easing that terminated in 2014. $17 billion a month all by itself, I don't know. I don't find that all that alarming, but the article continues. It says sales set a record in January, hitting $57 billion. All right, now we're talking some serious money, in my opinion. China, Russia, and Brazil led the way, each dumping at least $1 billion in U.S. debt in March alone. So far in 2016, and I believe they're referring only to the first quarter of the year, global central banks have jettisoned $123 billion in U.S. banks. In the entire four quarters of last year, they sold off $226 billion. In other words, last year, the average quarterly sales of U.S. bonds was about $30 billion per month. In the first quarter of this year, central banks sold $123 billion, four times as much as they sold during an average quarter in 2015. That's evidence that central banks are not just selling U.S. bonds, but they're selling at an accelerating pace. According to the U.S. Treasury Department, central banks are selling U.S. Treasuries at a pace not seen since at least 1978. Once the biggest supplier of U.S. debt, China is now selling treasuries at what CNN calls an alarming rate. They said between December and February, China's central bank sold off an alarming $236 billion. That's in 3 months. You're talking $80 billion a month. To help support its currency, which China is slowly letting become more controlled by markets and less by government, which is interesting. Head of the International Fixed Income at Federated Investors, Ihab Salib, said fear and economic instability is driving the sell-off. There's still this fear that everything's going to fall apart. CNN Money said the sell-off of treasuries may be part of an effort to prop up their currencies. By selling U.S. banks, central banks can get hard cash to buy their local currency and prevent it from losing much value. You know, that doesn't make much sense to me. I don't know that that gold is only for sale for dollars. You know? And that's what they imply here. They say, first, we've got to sell off the U.S. debt to get dollars, then we'll use the dollars to buy up local currency. Why not just sell the gold for local currency? And let's just trade it. Say, look, I got this much gold. How much local? Let's buy up this local currency. Why go through the intermediate step of selling bonds to get hard cash? I don't think that's a viable explanation of what's happening right now. And again, they say by selling U.S. debt, central banks can get hard cash to buy up their local currency and prevent it from losing too much value. It doesn't make sense to me. It might be true. I may not understand it, but it doesn't make sense to me. But many of these central banks aren't just purchasing local currency. They are also buying gold. Now, the fact that banks are selling U.S. bonds in order to purchase both local currencies and gold implies that the central banks are not selling bonds for the primary purpose of buying local currencies, or for the primary purpose of buying gold. It implies, insofar as they're selling out, okay, I'll take local currencies, I'll take gold. I don't care. Jim, I got to get something for these U.S. bonds. What's that signal? It signals that the central bank's primary purpose in selling U.S. bonds is to dump U.S. bonds. They'll take gold, they'll take local currencies, they may take crude oil, I don't know. But the implication is they're dumping U.S. bonds. And this is important. It implies that at least some of the world's central banks are anticipating a significant default in the U.S. government's ability to repay its debts and a significant decline in the perceived value of U.S. bonds. They're dumping them now before the price falls. That's the way this appears to me. I mentioned in the first article or in the previous article we talked about that people are, yes, they understand that some people are selling off U.S. bonds. They say, well, we think this is because of the interest rates, negative interest rates. Well, I don't doubt that plays a role. But I think the primary business is get out from under the bonds. According to the World Gold Council, Russia, which is in a difficult recession, nevertheless, increased its gold reserves by 46 tons in the first quarter of the year. That was 52% higher than the same period in 2015. China purchased 35 tons between January and March, adding to the 103 tons it bought through the second half of last year. All this makes sense in a world of perpetually low and even negative interest rates, coupled with rampant economic uncertainty and a looming recession. The yield on treasuries and other sovereign debt becomes less and less attractive in a low-rate environment. The yield is what they want to focus on. They say, oh, this is all about, this is because gold doesn't have a yield. There is no interest rate paid on gold. You can get interest on bonds. You make some sort of a, for example, the bonds are the best example. You can collect interest on bonds. You can't collect interest on gold. And people sit back and they say, well, there's no reason to buy gold. I can't make interest on it. But when you stop to think about it, when you consider bonds, the bond market, and interest rates, if you have a very high-quality bond, what's regarded as a high-quality bond, you might only be getting 1% or 2% interest on it because it has the least amount of risk. Only has 1%, 2% that they're paying out. Why? Because it's a high-quality, low-risk bond. As risk increases, so does the interest rate. For example, you can get a junk bond that might pay 20%. It's referred to as a junk bond because the risk is high. There's a good chance that the corporation that's issuing this junk bond, they're going to go broke. So they have to pay a higher interest rate to borrow money. Junk bonds, 20%, in theory. Prime bonds are 1% or 2%, in theory. What's the interest rate on gold? Zero. Does that indicate that gold is undesirable, or does it indicate that gold is an extraordinarily safe investment? You don't have to pay interest on it because it's super safe. The risk, 20% on junk bonds, 2% on primary bonds, 0% on gold. Why? Because gold is perhaps the safest investment you can get into in this world. So they don't pay interest on it. People sit back and look at this and say, well, that's a reason not to buy gold. And I'm sitting there and thinking to myself, no, that's a reason. The 0% interest rate, if you're looking for safety, if you're looking for security in your investment, that's why gold doesn't pay an interest rate. It's super secure. That doesn't mean that it doesn't go up and down. You know that as well as I do. But long term, it's probably an unbeatable investment over a period of 5 years or more. Right? There'll be certain stocks that will do better than gold once in a while. They'll come up. But in terms of a generic, compare gold to stocks, gold to bonds, over a period of 5 years, 10, I doubt that the balance, the other investments can come close to gold over an extended period of time. Again, I don't doubt that lower negative interest rates plays a role in encouraging people to buy gold. But I don't think low interest rates are the primary motivator. From my perspective, the sell-off of U.S. bonds is not about the bond's interest rates. It's about the bond's principal. I think the central banks are dumping U.S. bonds because they're anticipating a significant decline in the value of the bond's principal. You got a bond that says $1 million on it. All right? You can assume that you are going to, if you wanted to sell that bond, you're going to get the best part of $1 million back. Mm-hmm. But maybe the banks are sitting then and they are thinking to themselves, no, I don't think so. I've got a U.S. bond for $1 million here, and what am I going to get out of it? I think we're only going to get $900,000. I think the price of the bond is going to fall. I think it might even go to $800,000. I don't know how far it can fall. I want to sell that bond, and I don't care about the negative interest rate. It's a triviality. I don't care about the low interest rate. It's a triviality compared to what may be happening to the principal in the value of those U.S. bonds. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs, what's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners we're still carrying the specials this week, the 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle, 20 Silver Eagles for $5.55, and 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle and 90% silver for a little less at $530, which carries about 20 ounces of silver in that 90% quarters and dimes. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. We got a lot of Gold Eagles, and you know, we carry all product lines. We buy, sell, and trade. So give us a call and visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. I just want to talk a little bit about U.S. credit card balances, but first, during the break, Al and I were talking about, I had read five tech companies, the largest tech companies, own or holding about a third of the U.S. cash. And we were talking about how that would take a lot of the inflation out of the system. You know, people are puzzled, and you know that these corporations are working with Washington and Wall Street and the Federal Reserve. And perhaps we were talking about, once those dollars begin to lose a little more of their value, you're going to see these corporations beginning to dump a lot of the cash that they're holding. They're not going to want to hold it for any extended period of time, Al.
Not once it starts to lose. If inflation fires up, mm-hmm. they're holding those dollars, perhaps because they expect things to remain stable, perhaps because they expect deflation.
Or perhaps
but if
they're
inflation
working.
Kicks in, those dollars become worth less every single day in an era of deflation. So if government circumstances, whatever, causes inflation, the people sitting on that one-third of the currency, they're going to all of a sudden say, let me out of here. I don't want to lose. I don't want to hang out of this if it's losing value. And they will find things to spend, the currency on. And when they do, that will accelerate whatever inflation is going on at that time. We might have 5% inflation, and they say, oh, my gosh, we've got to dump these dollars. Well, when they do, the inflation rate might jump to 10%, maybe more.
That's an incredible amount of cash being held within five corporations. And personally, I believe they're just working with the Federal Reserve, the Wall Street, Washington, in order perhaps to help stem, to keep inflation out of the system.
Well, maybe.
Because we talk about that. Well, we know they're all, you know, they work with the government. You know, they work with the Federal Reserve. I mean,
I'm guessing that we're talking about corporations like Apple.
Correct.
All right.
Yes.
Anyone else?
Apple,
any other?
Google. I can't remember the list. Cisco. Cisco was one. Cisco.
When you say
Apple.
They're working with the government, if they have that much money in their bank accounts, maybe the government is working with them. If you catch my drift, which one is pulling the plow and which one is pushing the plow?
Wow.
Which one's riding on the plow?
Also, we also know that these corporations have been buying back, not just these five, but all corporations. There's a lot of them that are buying back their own shares in order to keep their prices stable and to rise higher. Once that stops, and a lot of from last year, that is down with these corporations buying their own shares back. And you won't see a much higher stock market if they decide to stop buying back their own shares.
You know, one of the things...
It won't go higher than 18,000.
One of the things that crosses my mind is that for much of the last 15 or 20 years, China has been holding our debt. They've been taking the U.S. bonds and they're hanging on to them, and they came up with something like $1.2 trillion in U.S. debt instruments. But China's in the process of selling off their U.S. bonds. But I'm wondering, from your description, if these five corporations, these tech corporations, if they're not accomplishing something similar. China's dumping the bonds, but the tech corporations are hanging on to dollars. They are performing a function that's very similar to what China did when it was just stacking up U.S. treasuries. Do you see what I'm saying, Melody?
Yeah, I do. I don't know what the point of it is.
The point is that even though China is presumably selling off a lot of bonds right now, it may be that these five corporations are at the same time just sitting on large quantities of cash. And the result is, although China is perhaps stimulating inflation by selling those bonds, I'm not sure if that would be a correct interpretation or not, but assuming they're putting more cash into circulation, they're spending the cash rather than saving it, this is being balanced off by the five corporations. Whether this is coincidence or evidence of some sort of intent, it still reveals that a mountain of cash is out there and under the right circumstances can be released and spent. And it will cause inflation if inflation isn't already happening. And if inflation is happening, it will be spent just to get rid of the dollars before they become worthless or worth less and thereby contribute to inflation. So right now, deflation is, in some regards, you can attribute it to these five corporations that are holding on to all this cash.
I wouldn't. Again, we agree to disagree. I don't see it as deflation. I just see it as a way to hold the inflation rate down, which I don't consider as deflation. But
same thing.
But you know,
I'm not
China.
Saying it's deflation.
It isn't the same.
Deflation.
No, I don't think it's the same thing. But you know, China does have a little bit of leverage, and I don't know how much the amount that they control in bonds. When the U.S. does something that they don't agree with, how can they, you know, the idea was they would always use their bonds as a way to, the treasuries as a way to negotiate or use as leverage against the U.S. And so an interesting web has been spun.
Yeah, and it's something the web has trapped both the little insects that are flying through the air, they're caught in the web, but so is the spider that spun the web. Everybody's caught in the web, and everybody's hoping that the web doesn't break and fall to the ground where the ants can consume the everybody who's caught in the web. But
and if you were caught in the web once and you escaped it, chances are many go back because
they think you're invulnerable.
I have escaped
the web. I'm invulnerable and I can fly into it again and I won't be hurt.
But U.S. credit card balances are on track to hit $1 trillion this year. Banks are aggressively pushing their plastic, and consumers are becoming more comfortable carrying debt. The sum is almost at the all-time peak of the $1.02 trillion that was set back in July of 2008. So, you know, you can say that people think that there's an improving job market, which is questionable, but they hear a lot of discussions, their confidence. Again, this is why confidence is strong. They believe what comes out of Washington, which surprises me. They believe the numbers that come out of Washington, but yet they don't. We have the election that we're having this year, but credit cards are one of the few business lines working for banks right now. So, you know, they've been pushing them. Let's see what else was interesting in this article. That's pretty much, you're just seeing automobiles, the lending, and a lot of this, these credit cards are going to subprime lenders.
Yeah.
And it is
much the same
much
as
the same.
In 2000, prior to 2007, 2008, they were using subprime mortgages. Going to borrowers, all right? And they did it with mortgages, blew up in everybody's face. The more the collapse in the mortgage industry very nearly is attributed with triggering the Great Recession and very nearly a global depression. But now we're so much smarter, Melody. We're not doing subprime on houses because we learned our lesson on that. So we're going to do subprime on cars instead. You see?
Cars, credit cards.
What do they say? Those who don't learn from history are destined to repeat it. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about we are achieving a level of debt in credit cards comparable to what was seen prior to 2008, mm-hmm. which was the onset of the Great Recession again. You know, this may be a coincidence or it may be another one of those things. Don't learn from history. You're going to repeat it. You know, it's like flunking. You know, back when I was a kid in school, they used to flunk you if you didn't learn all your lessons, and you would have to repeat the first grade or the second grade or whatever grade. And the kids would make fun of you if you flunked. I don't even know if they flunk people anymore. They pass you if you can't read, write, see. As long as you have a pulse, I think they'll pass you. This is the same thing with history and economics. You flunk. You still flunk. You can't get over it. They can't do anything about it where they maintain your self-esteem even if you're an idiot. If you're going to do the same things and see the same things we saw back prior to 2008 and we get another Great Recession, shall we sit back and say you're a victim or shall we sit back and say you be dumb? And the answer is, if you're not catching up on this thing, if you're not following events or to the extent, and they're hard to follow. They're hard to understand because they're so complex and you hear everything from so many sides, but just the same, you see these leaves in the breeze and you make a decision on your own. Your eyes, your ears, what do you see? What do you hear? What do you think? You know, your future will depend on your decisions. And if you're not paying attention to these apparent coincidences, then perhaps you are doomed to flunk and repeat history. What else, Melody?
Well, I guess there was some excitement near the White House today. There's a suspect down in critical condition. They shot an armed suspect near the White House.
Good.
So a little excitement there.
You know, you got to be nuts. You really do. I mean, of course you have to be nuts. Come on. I'm going to get my slingshots, and I'm going to go see if I can shoot President Obama with a slingshot. Are you crazy? You can't get to Obama with an AK-47.
There's a lot of crazy people out there, Al.
I guess there are. And I guess there are. But, I mean, some of this stuff is really just lunacy. You know, they don't need to shoot these people. They just need to catch them in a net and send them off to camp for a tune-up.
I don't know what they need to do with them, but
lithium, little Prozac, straighten them right out.
Temporarily, anyway. But what's next, Al?
Got an article from Ms. Shedlock. Chicago pension liabilities jump 168%, understated by $11.5 billion. New accounting rules show Chicago, as everyone probably knows, Chicago is in massive debt. They can't pay their pensions, and there's been litigation and attempts to negotiate, and it's all blowing up in their face, of course. And it says new accounting rules show Chicago has understated its pension liabilities by $11.5 billion. At the end of 2015, the stated total liability, now at the end of 2015, that's like what, 5 months ago. The total stated liability was $7.1 billion. Today, it's $18.6 billion. That's a jump in net liabilities of 168% in 5 months. Mayor Rahm Emanuel has hopes pinned on union concessions. It's betting he can talk the unions into giving up some of what they think they're entitled to. And number two, he's expecting help from state legislatures, from the state legislature. And Ms. Shedlock says neither is likely. There's an article from Bloomberg that deals with the same issue. They're saying thanks to the defeat of the city's retirement fund overhaul plan by the Illinois Supreme Court and new accounting rules, Chicago's so-called net pension liability to its municipal employees annuity and benefit fund soared to $18.6 billion. There are 70,000 workers and retirees represented by that pension fund. Some of them are workers. I don't know what the breakdown is between the workers and the retirees. There's 70,000 total. Workers are presumably still working. Retirees have already retired. 70,000 of them, they have allegedly, they have an unfunded liability of $20 billion, according to this article. Divide the $20 billion by 70,000 workers and retirees, and they are on average, they are short $286,000 for each member of that pension fund. The key driver was a court ruling striking down Mayor Rahm Emanuel's plan to cut benefits and boosted city and boosted city and employee contributions. Without it taking place, now the fund is now set to run out of money within 10 years. Now, within 10 years doesn't necessarily mean that 2017 or 2016, the fund is going to go dry. It says within 10 years, which could happen any time before we get to 10 years, that the pension fund could go dry. What they mean, and when it is exhausted, that means there is no money. It doesn't mean that we cut pensions by 10% or 20% or whatever. It means we cut them by 100%, 10 years maximum from now. That's the implication, and it could happen in as little as 3 years, maybe 5 years. And the point to all of this is Chicago is in deep, deep doo-doo when it comes to pension funds, and there can't be a happy ending on this. I'm Alfred Addis. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
The aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to share with the listeners, it's a little off topic on finances, but Oklahoma. Congratulations, Oklahoma. There's a bill making it a felony to perform abortions. And right now it's on the governor's desk for signature. And this legislation passed in the Oklahoma House and Senate yesterday, that would make it illegal for doctors to perform abortions that were not necessary to save the life of the mother. So it's and what surprises me is the sweeping measure. I don't know if I have the numbers here, but I mean, it passed in the House of Representatives with a vote of 59-9 last month, and yesterday it passed in the Senate 33-12. So,
idea whose time has come.
Congratulations, Oklahoma, and make sure your governor signs it.
It's also evidence that's of something else that's happening in this country, and the states themselves are beginning to stand up and assert themselves in some instances against Washington, D.C. They say, we don't want you down here. Leave us alone. We can handle things on our own.
Well, Obama has used his authority to say, either you do what I want you to do or I'm going to pull funding, just like with the transgender bathrooms.
Yep.
You either do what I tell you to do or we'll pull funding. States are finally going to say, well, you know.
Yeah, what should be is just respond back to Mr. Obama and explain to him, well, you go ahead and pull funding and we will stop paying income taxes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, come on down. Yep. Let's see if you can arrest the whole state. We'll tie you up in court for the next century. This is a two-way street. You need our money more than we need yours. Mess with us, we'll stop paying income taxes.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yep.
Then we'll see where it goes. How do you like that?
Congratulations to Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
So.
There's one other point about this. You know, why hasn't abortion been stopped at the federal level? The Republican Party has been condemning abortion for 40 years, perhaps. And yet, even when the Republican Party was at maximum strength, perhaps under the George W. Bush administration, there was no serious effort to end abortion. Why do you think that is, Melody?
Tell me, Al.
I think it's because the Republican Party, after the New Deal and the Democrats grabbed control of the federal government in particular, and to a greater and to a large extent the state governments, the Republican Party became essentially a second-tier party. They became a wannabe party. They were there, but they didn't actually have much power. All right, the Democrats were holding all the power, and then the Democrats came across with Roe v. Wade, and they legalized abortion, and that laid the foundation for the silent majority. It laid the foundation for evangelicals who supported the Republican Party because the Republican Party said, we're going to end abortion. But they never did, even when they had opportunity to do so. And I believe the reason is that the Republican Party sat back and said, ha, the heck with those little kids. We don't care about them. The foundation for the Republican Party's power has been the abortion issue. This is what really changed them from a second-tier party into a number one party, at least for a while. It was the abortion issue that brought the religious right to support the Republican Party. The anti-abortionists came to support the Republican Party, the evangelicals. It laid the foundation. And I think the Republican Party sat back and said, look, if we end abortion, we're going to lose all that support. Now, I don't know that to be true, but that is my theory. Du jour, right? And that's why I think the Democrats, they want abortion. And the Republicans wanted the support they could get from the anti-abortion activists and from anti-abortion sentiment. And so in that result, we continued to murder unborn children. So politics makes for strange and even psychopathic bedfellows. What else? What's next, Melody? How about the dreaded cross of death?
Oh, jeez.
Okay. I got an article here. And the headline is, I changed the headline a little bit, but it's the same words. The dreaded cross of death formation has just hit the markets. The cross of death. The cross of death, Melody. Standard & Poor's has just staged a very dangerous looking move. The S&P 500's 50-week moving average broke below its 100-week moving average. All right? Now, this is news. This move is called a death cross, and for good reason. Last time it happened was in 2008, right before the entire market crashed. Once again, in 2008, we saw the 50-day moving average moved below the 100-day moving average. Next thing you know, we had a crash. Now, whether this is a cause or a coincidence remains to be seen, but if you believe in charts, this is an important event. The whole mess feels just like that end of 2007 or beginning of 2008. Time to prepare for this bubble to burst is now. Imagine if you'd been prepared for the 2008 crash back in late 2007. It's a good point. If you really had good evidence to all but guarantee that the price of stocks was going to fall dramatically over the course of in the near future, then it would be a good time to go short on stocks. Uh-huh. And you might be able to make a killing off the deal. But what do you think about the cross of death, Melody?
Well, I mean, it's charts and, in these markets that are so rigged, it's interesting, it's a comparison and so forth. But again, I don't hold much stock, not in today's world but it's interesting. Yeah. But I also wanted to, not to change the topic here, I came across an advertisement online for a bag of 90% silver Franklin halves. And here's a perfect example, and again, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but it's a perfect example on what you see online, and you never have anybody to talk to. They're selling it for over $14,000. Why spend $14,000 on 50-cent pieces when you could save $1,000 and buy quarters or dimes? Mm-hmm. So you get more value for your money with quarters and dimes at this point, and buy more silver. And that's how folks should be buying their gold and silver. These are the things that you have to think about. And I received another, I mentioned this earlier in the week, a promotion from somebody, And it's like, if you buy this, we're going to send you a coin that's going to go up 6,200%. It's like, why would he be sending you some coin that's going to go up?
Yeah, that's a fact.
If I had a coin that I know is going to go up 6,200, do you think I'd give it away for free?
Yeah.
Of course not. Neither would anyone listening to this program. So, you know,
got the P.T. Barnum Annual Award for one being born every minute. I think today it's more like one every fraction of a second, but it's the same idea.
Perhaps.
Still the annual P.T. Barnum Award, and the people that are selling that product that give you a coin that will go up 6,200% or whatever they said, they are competitors. They're contenders for this year's annual P.T. Barnum Award.
You know, earlier in the week, Al, you and I were talking about tariffs, and the U.S. Increased the tariffs on steel by 500%.
Chinese steel.
Mm-hmm. And increased it by 500%. And there's been a lot of discussion with Donald Trump imposing tariffs.
Yep. Got an article from CNN Money. It says, Trump's tariffs will cost Americans thousands, report says. Donald Trump's tough talk of imposing tariffs on China, Japan, and Mexico gets big cheers at his rallies. What his supporters may not realize, however, is how much those tariffs will cost them. Trump has repeatedly said that America has been on the losing end of trade deals for years. In his view, tariffs would level the playing field by making imports more expensive. That, in turn, would prompt American companies to produce more domestically and would bring back jobs. I don't think there's any doubt that rising tariffs would bring back jobs, right? If we cut out, if the products from China are no longer as cheap as they've been in the past, guess what? We'll buy American. And when we buy American, we're going to put a bunch of people back to work. And yes, you will pay more when the tariffs are imposed. Prices of products will increase. But your neighbor is going to get a job. And you're not going to have to support him on welfare. You understand? And is there going to be a cost? Yes, there will. But is there a benefit? Yes, there is. The article continues, says, experts, however, say boosting tariffs would be a bad deal for Americans, particularly the poor. I don't know where they get these experts. You understand that? It's not a bad deal. It's one of these things that's like squeezing the balloon. You squeeze it at one place, it bulges somewhere else. Right? There's no question about it. But we're being squeezed, the whole nation is being squeezed by global free trade and low tariffs. It's caused American laborers and factories and manufacturers to compete head-on with cheap labor in third world countries. And it was a competition we couldn't win and had to bring our standard of living down. In my opinion, if we had simply stayed out of global free trade, kept our trade barriers high, our standard of living would not have been stagnant or falling for the last 30, 40 years. We need the tariff barriers. We can sell to each other. What's the difference between me starting a business where I supposedly under global free trade, I'll be able to compete by selling to China? Or I can go to China and build my factory and sell my product from China with cheap labor back into the United States and make a higher profit. What's the difference between that and just putting up high tariff barriers around the United States and instead of selling my products manufactured in Texas, selling them to China or Europe or South America or whatever? What if I just sold them to South Dakota or Maine or Nebraska, New York, California? This is the biggest single, you could say the Eurozone is the single biggest market in the world. This is the second biggest, and it is the single most coherent market in the world. Why not just sell American? Why not buy American? Yeah, the prices would go up, but the unemployment would go down. And some experts say this would be a bad deal for American. I don't think these are experts. I think these are people who are advocating global free trade. It's not about what's right. It's not about what's best for the American people. It's about they have a political position, in my opinion, or my suspicion, and they're saying, oh, no, this would be a terrible deal for Americans, particularly the poor. Well, it may be a bad deal for the poor. I agree with that. Prices would go up. It would be difficult for the poor. But on the other hand, the number of jobs would also increase, and a lot of the poor would have jobs. Some of the poor are going to pay a price. Some of the poor are going to benefit. Some of the poor would suffer from this. A lot of the poor would not. Tariffs would cost the average household $2,200 a year, or 4% of their after-tax income. This is according to a new study from nonprofit National Foundation for American Policy, conducted by David Turek, this is largely because imports under Trump's policy would become more expensive, raising the price of competing American-made goods also by about 11%. I don't doubt that's true. But while government tells us that we have about 4.8, 4.9% unemployment in this country, John Williams at ShadowStats.com says the real unemployment figure is something like 23%. How are we going to deal with that unemployment figure with 23% unemployment while we still have global free trade and no tariffs to protect us from Chinese labor and Indian labor, Mexican labor, whatever, third world labor that is working for a fraction of the price of American laborers? I don't see how we're going to reduce our real unemployment numbers unless we raise tariffs and we stop having to compete directly with third world labor, because the only thing that can come of it is that the price of American labor has to fall and fall and fall until we are close to matching that of third world labor. And then there will be some kind of global harmony, I'll give you that, but there will also be a global standard of living comparable to who knows what you see where. Honduras, India, South Africa will all be the same, right? But what is my incentive in making the whole world the same? Why am I obligated to save the world? I'm quite content to save the people of the United States of America insofar as anyone can do that. That's all my only focus, and it's the only focus our government should have because we elected them. We didn't say, hey, we're going to send you to Congress, the Senate, or the White House to do what's right for the people of other continents and countries. You're supposed to look out for number one. They haven't been doing it. Something's got to be done. And maybe we're going to see that happen, and new tariffs could be a big step in that direction. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend, ladies and gentlemen. And in the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball.
Money, money, money. In a rich man's world, money, 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 always funny.